Today's episode is brought to you by Become the Spotlight. If you are in business, then I hate to break it to you. If nobody knows about you, they just can't do business with you. And in today's noisy digital world, I know how scary it can feel to have to cut through the noise and stand out and become more visible. And it turns out that there are actually five things that you can look into that can give you a simple framework and some actionable steps to take to improve your ability to impact the world with your message and your story. And I've put them out there for you to benchmark yourself against. So you can go to www.becomethespotlight.com and identify the areas that you're doing really well and some of the areas that you can do a little bit better. So let me know what your score is. I can't wait to hear from you. And that's www.becomethespotlight.com. Hi, and welcome to the Unconventionalist Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRouste. And in today's episode, I have a very special guest that I'm very excited to share with you. A couple of things I wanted to mention before we dive into today's conversation. Thanks for all the messages and comments regarding the facelift of the Unconventionalist Podcast and the branding design that was created by Hadrian Chatelet from The Wern Agency. Really appreciate all the words and comments, and I'm glad that you approved, and some of you might have had some comments, and that's cool, right? It's all part of the transformation, but I'm really happy with the final outcome. And today we've got a very special episode. If you're looking for inspiration in terms of mindset and just getting on with things and achieving incredible things, then today's guest is going to be someone that you are absolutely going to love. Jodi Cook is someone who I've had the pleasure and honor to meet over the last and get to know better over the last few months after my friend Graham Alcott invited me part of this. I don't even know how to describe us, right? Like this small kind of group of awesome humans, a very small group of us, and we kind of meet up once a month, and we have this WhatsApp group, and we share our wins every week and ask questions to each other, and it's like an unbelievable, amazing group of people and humans, and I'm incredibly fortunate. We call ourselves the Avengers. And Jodi's the kind of person, I've got to give credit to Jodi, and I've got to say this before we kick off this conversation, that is, when I was looking out for my book, proposal and book deals, and, you know, I was kind of, I'll be honest, I was kind of thinking small in some way, and Jodi kind of called me out and said, why don't you just go and swing for the fences and just go for some of the big publishers? That you got, what have you got to lose? Like, they should be happy to publish you. Like, you really need to see yourself as this, you know, gift that you're bringing to them, and I'm really grateful for that. And Jodi's a character because she has built a social media agency over 10 years and has just recently exited and sold a company. She used to be a runner, and then, as you'll hear from today's conversation, competed for Team GB in powerlifting. And she's just an all-around awesome human. She doesn't have a subscription to Netflix. She's written like 5 or 6 books. She recently co-wrote a book with my friend Daniel Priestley. We talk a bit more about that journey, and it's just, she's, her output is just phenomenal. And she's also a contributor on Forbes. So she is just an all-around awesome human. I hope you're going to enjoy today's conversation. If you do, please leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. Let me know what you enjoy about the show. I generally read them. It brings a big smile to my face when I look at them on Apple Podcasts, and it helps bring the show to more people so we can impact more. So that in itself is awesome. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one and only Jodi Cook. All right, Jodi, welcome to the show. I thought I'd just put you on the spot, press record straight up. Look, I'm really excited about having you. And one of the challenges I have about bringing people I know is always knowing what is like personal information and what is public knowledge. So if I ever go on a topic and you're like, and you just like want to give me a sign of like, don't go there, we could have a safe word like barbell, you know, something like that.
Okay, fine.
Sounds good.
Or okay, it's like a metaphor. It's like a kick under the table.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Kind of like, what are you talking about? But so we met through Graham Alcott, who put us all together. And we are known as the Avengers. Let it be said. Let it be known. And I've really valued your contribution. Like you always jump in and share your advice. And as I started to learn and read more about you, I was like, Jodi's crazy. Like, she does so many different things. It's insane. So recently, let's kick off with this. Recently, you had not one but 2 books being shortlisted for Business Book Awards of the year. I don't know what the technical thing is. Instagram rules and how to raise entrepreneurial children. I've got it here.
Kids.
Yeah, that's the one. So tell us about, like, how did that feel? Was that something that you kind of expected or kind of visualized and saw, or what was that about?
Being shortlisted. Yeah.
With two books.
I didn't even think about it. So I don't know how we got put forward for them. So Daniel Priestley, who's my co-author for How to Raise Entrepreneurial mm-hmm. Kids, he mentioned, oh, the Business Book Awards are going on, we should put a submission in. So that's what I did for How to Raise Entrepreneurial Kids. And then at the same time, I thought, oh, I've got another book. So I just told my publisher for Instagram yeah. Rules. And then they submitted that one. And then on the actual night, which was a YouTube ceremony where every head judge for each category announced the shortlist, yeah. that was a huge surprise. Yeah. And it was actually really nice being not even just being shortlisted, but being at an awards ceremony or feeling like you were part of it, because I love those. And that's what I've really missed in yeah. the last year or so in pandemic life.
Oh my God. I know. Tell me about it. Right. But yeah, congrats on that. That's really cool. And you're a beast. It's just like you're already writing the draft for your next book. I mean, so how many books have you written to date then?
I don't know. So two published yes. books, which is Instagram Rules, and that's published with Quarto. Yeah. And they actually approached me yeah. to ask me, they pitched me an Instagram book yeah. and I was like, yeah, sure. But that was because I'd already written an Instagram book that they found that they okay. liked, which was self-published. Okay. And then How to Raise Entrepreneurial Kids was co-authored with Daniel Priestley, and that's through Rethink yeah. Press. But then every other one has been self-published yeah. and that's four kids books yep. three resource packs yeah. yeah a lot.
And it's like stop living like you're gonna live forever or something, like stop living like you're gonna
stop yeah stop acting like you're gonna live forever was actually a compilation of a lot of different articles I'd written yeah. So I got a contributor slot on Forbes two years ago okay. now, and started writing articles. And then someone emailed me and said I'd written one called How to Stop Caring About What Everyone Else Thinks. Mm. And I got an email to say, I really love this article. Have you got it in a printed format? Because I want to show my daughters, because I want to like put it on their yeah. walls, because all they care about is what everyone else yes. thinks. And I want to remind them that it doesn't matter. Yes. And that's when I thought, huh, that'd be good to have a printed version. And then I just put them all into a book. Yeah. And then one of the articles was called Stop Acting Like You're Going to Live Forever. So I made that the title.
It's a great title. And so how did you come about the Forbes opportunity then? How did you end up starting contributing and writing for Forbes?
It was from being included on the Forbes 30 under 30 yes. list in 2017. Okay. And that was from, it's like a whole, everything's always a chain backwards, isn't it? Something leads to something yeah. else, and then it leads to something else. But it started off because the kids' books that I co-wrote, and they're all about introducing kids to entrepreneurial role models, we managed to get a national deal to gift them to every primary school in the UK. Mm. And that got us a listing on Forbes 30 under 30. And then I went to an event and I met one of the editors who said, hey, we're starting this contributor thing. And I was like, yes,
get in.
I need to be on this. Yeah. So I pretty much shamelessly followed her up
yeah.
every week yeah. and just said, hey, you ready to launch it yet? And she was like, nope, but I'll let you know. And the next week I was like, hey, you ready? She was like, nope, still the same answer. And then when they were ready to yeah. launch, I was one of the people that they thought about. And that's been amazing.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, and again, tell me if this is off limit, but, you know, you've had conversations with the likes of Ryan Holiday, you know, talking about book marketing and tactics, and because was that and Wim Hof, you know, like you seem to be like connecting to all these incredible people on the back of some of the articles you're writing. Like, what has that opened up for you in terms of both being able to reach out to people, but both for yourself and what you're learning about yourself in the process of writing these Forbes articles?
Yeah, I think it's opened up loads. I think that I would always approach someone with a specific idea for an article. Mm. I wouldn't, like when I approached Wim Hof, it was because I'd just read his book and then I was like, hey, this could be good for business owners. So when I approached him, that's what I said. I said, I wanted to write an article on your method for business owners. Can we talk? And then I set up a Zoom call with his daughter. And I thought that it was going to be someone else like organizing the call. But then I turned up and he was just there ready to chat. So then I just chatted to him about, he's amazing.
Yeah, he's out there, right?
Like he's just mad in the best.
Yeah, he feels like he's completely eccentric in the best of worlds. Yeah.
So that was a really, that was just a really interesting interview. Had loads of notes to write up into something. And also something I do when I'm interviewing people and writing them up for Forbes is I'll always run it by them first because I just want them to be proud of it. Mm. I don't try and take what they say and, I don't know, twist it around to fit my agenda. I show them before.
Have you ever had anyone who's like, actually, I don't want you to publish it. Like, I've changed my mind. Have you ever had anybody's kind of push back? No?
No, but if they did, I would not use it.
That's,
it's too important. I think it's too important that they're happy with
100%
with what's out there. Yeah.
No, I get that. So Forbes 30 and 30, like it feels like that's like a badge of honor that everyone has like on their Instagram profiles and, you know, like kind of like their vibes and stuff. How did that come about? And did that change anything for you? Was there anything in that you kind of like, oh, this is pretty cool?
The main thing it's changed for me is that everyone thinks I'm still under 30. Whereas I'm 32, but as long as I keep Forbes 30 under 30 everywhere, I can just be under 30 forever.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's the main thing. I don't know. It's a really good network and it led to meeting a lot of just really amazing people. Yeah. The main thing it led to was becoming a contributing author for Forbes. How it came about was just a friend put me forward. I think a lot of things just happen in that way. You know, like when I feel like I've spent my kind of career to date, so just under 10 years, just trying to put happy vibes out there and trying to meet as many people as possible and trying to get to know people and make friends and everything else that comes with it. And so I feel like what I've found from that now is that things just appear, opportunities just come about. Yeah. And that happens a lot and it feels like magic.
Yeah, you've also got this mentality, right? It's kind of like... I don't know how to put it, but every time we have chats or when we connect and stuff, you've always got this elevation of vibration. I know it sounds like a weird bird, but it feels like you're at a frequency. And I'm sure there are moments where you're just like, screw this. And I just want to, maybe, I don't know. Maybe Jodie never has moments where she's like, screw this. I want to stay in bed and watch Netflix. But, you know, you've got bench press in the middle of your living room. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff, right? But it is true that, you know, and I've got to give credit to you for me going after bigger publishers and big name publishers, because I remember when we first talked and I was asking you questions around publishing and stuff and you were like, why would you go for like the big ones, like they should be happy to have you. And it was like this mindset shift, and I'm just curious, was that something instilled in you from a young age? Did you feel like you've always had that, or would you point it to a point in time when something happened to you or someone came in your life and it kind of changed?
I think that until I was about 21, I was on the, what I call an education conveyor belt, which most people go through, which is where they just go to the next. It's like you're playing an education video game where you pick your GCSEs and then you pick your A-levels and then you go to uni. You don't question. You don't think, oh, do I actually want to go to university? You just go, or I did anyway, because that was just what was expected. And then I think that it wasn't until I was about 21 when I left uni, when I got on a graduate scheme, that graduate scheme actually taught me how to think. And so it was I don't even know how it came about or how I applied for it or how I ended up getting on this graduate scheme. But it was a cohort of 25 people, and it was with the National Skills Academy for Social Care.
Okay.
And it was all about developing the next leaders in social care. And so we were all placed in different placements around the UK. And I was in Sheffield at an organisation that had a lot of challenges and was pretty much thrown in the deep end in kind of social care leadership. But at the same time as doing this, the whole cohort of 25 people met up every month on an away day somewhere. And we were taught how to think. So we had group coaching classes. We learned about Myers-Briggs and we learned how to understand ourselves. Mm. We were assigned a coach and we learned.
And you're 21
year
old. We're like, you're 21 years old.
Oh yeah. It was incredible. I'm 21 years old.
I took 21 shots on my 21st birthday of tequila. That is how drastically different my 21st was.
Yeah. I'm so grateful to that graduate scheme because I really think it taught me how to really think. And I think I've always been very independent, and that's definitely come from like my mom. But the graduate scheme really did make me think, hang on, what do I want to do? What am I here to do? What do I want to stand for? And then I've thought that way ever since.
That's mad. Yeah. No, but it's interesting because it's like, it is, you often have that challenging mindset around, well, why not? You know, why not? And also part of your journey is, and I don't know what the technical term is or if I'm correctly saying this, but you got interested in competitive lifting, or I don't know what the correct my stupid dyslexia misinterpretation. What is the actual technical term?
It's powerlifting, but don't worry, because everyone gets
that's
it wrong.
It, powerlifting. Yeah. So how did you get into powerlifting, and when did that come about?
I used to be a runner and I used to do half marathons. Okay. And then I realized that I didn't really enjoy half marathons that much and I wanted to do 10Ks. And then I realized that I didn't really like 10Ks that much and I wanted to do 5Ks. And then I thought I should probably stop running because I'm trying to reduce the distance every time. It's obviously not my calling. Yeah. And what really frustrated me about doing 10Ks is I did so many different races. And I got the same time for like the last 7 or 8 that I did. And I found it really like demoralizing. It was like, no matter how hard I tried or how hard I didn't try, I got the same time. So I read a book. It was Paula Radcliffe's book and it's called How to Run.
Oh, and she talks a lot about. My ex-girlfriend, I think, used to rave about her. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good book, and she introduces cross training in it. Yeah. So that's when I started going to the gym and picking up weights and seeing what I could do with them. So I was probably running until I was like 23, okay. And then started weight training between like 24. Okay. So started going to the gym, started doing squats and bench press and deadlifts, and then joined a different gym where there were people there who competed. And having those role models who competed was like, wow, maybe I could do this. Yeah. And then I started looking at the numbers that people were lifting. And then as I started getting closer to those numbers, that's when I started thinking
PBs.
I could start.
Is this also known as a PB? Is it personal best, not peanut butter? I'm going to guess.
Yeah. So in America, they call them PRs for personal records, but I like PB because it sounds friendlier.
Okay, PB. Yeah.
But when you start powerlifting, you get what's called newbie gains, which is where you start and then all of a sudden you get like 80% of the progress you're ever going to make in the first like year. And then you spend the rest of your powerlifting career trying to get that next 20%. So newbie gains are brilliant and it's what keeps you going. Yeah. And then after that, if you improve like your deadlift by 2.5 kilos in a year, it's like, yes, this is great.
So powerlifting. So someone listening to this who've got no idea, right? Like they're thinking, is it like bicep curls that you're throwing rocks around? So what is powerlifting, right? Like what separates powerlifting from CrossFit? Someone's got no idea, right? Like how do you describe powerlifting?
Well, the main thing that people get confused by is powerlifting and weightlifting. So weightlifting is an Olympic sport. It consists of the clean and jerk and the snatch. Okay. And it's mainly throwing weight above your head. Okay. Whereas powerlifting is the squat, the bench press, and the deadlift. And each
like the foundations,
of those
like the,
is performed.
Like the super foundations of strength and conditioning. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so each of those is performed for one maximum repetition, and that's what you're judged on. And in a competition, you get 3 attempts at each.
So you haven't just competed on your own time, right? Like you've been part of a team.
Yes.
What's the name of that team, Jodie?
I have. Well, I competed. So in the UK, you have the British Championships, and then if you place well in the British Championships, and I've come third and second before in my weight category, which is the 57 kilo mm-hmm. category, then you have the potential to be selected for the national team. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've competed in the Western European Championships and
under Team GB.
Under Team GB and the World Championships and the Commonwealths.
So what's the, I mean, I know you're just like, this is typical joke. Like, yeah, of course I have. I've written like five books and competed in Team GB. I mean, why not? But so was that surreal for you? Like, 'cause I'm guessing you go from being a runner to kind of going, I should probably stop, and to start cross training to like, oh, I'm lifting weights and deadlifting. And suddenly you're wearing your country's colors and representing as an athlete, like as a national. Is that surreal? Like, is there a part of you that actually goes, this is a little surreal?
Yeah, I guess it's surreal. It's quite cool getting the emails through to say, hey, you've been selected as a lifter for this team. Yeah. You know, squads are on this date, yeah. And hearing all the athlete lingo. Yeah, that's quite cool. I do really enjoy competing. And I think I'm not really fazed by things like being on stage.
Yeah.
And I don't really get nervous. So that's all fine. And yeah, it's just really great to be able to do your sport at the top level.
Yeah.
But I don't think when I started, I set out to compete at the World Championships. I just set out to just lift and have a good time. I think that's probably the thread that runs through a lot of things. I really do just focused on
the next
on enjoying
step.
Myself. Yeah. And then it leads to quite cool different things that happen.
Well, I just want to kind of frame that for a second, because what you're saying matters so much, which is what you're effectively saying is I chase my curiosity or what's in front of me. And I don't think anything of it. Like, I don't think further than that. It's kind of like, I'm going to lift this weight, or I'm going to write this next page or what have you. And then the rest kind of follows, right? Because how many people get stuck? And you know this, because we've had this conversation about my own book where I'm just like, I don't know this. I'm ever going to get, you know. And I'm so focused on the outcome as opposed to the process of how I feel. Like, that's a really good point, you know, of like, how people can take that. And actually, the follow-up question is around, what have you learned from your, is it athletic side or like the sports aspect of what you do with business? Because up until very recently, and we'll talk about this in a second, you've been running your own agency. Can you see parallels between business and sports? And if so, what have been some of the most kind of poignant for you?
One of the main, oh, you said that word so beautifully. Amazing. I think one of the main things is focus. I think that you cannot be training for powerlifting, checking your phone in between sets or, you know, messing around. You have to be focused. And I'm a very much all or nothing type person with when I'm training or when I'm working. I try not to just be in a kind of multitasking state where you're trying to do lots of things. I try and do real focused work or real focused relaxation or real focused training. And I think one of the other things, especially in powerlifting, is that when you're in a competition, you have to squat to a certain depth, you have to bench press to a certain standard. Everything's got these set rules in place that the refs are looking for. And if you are making those mistakes in training, you can't just assume that they're going to fix themselves on the platform, because they won't. You'll just default to your mistakes. And I think that carries over a lot to business, because I always am fascinated by the concept of like a different version of someone, the fact that someone might be different at home or different at work or different with their team or different with someone,
different than the waiter, the waitress that they're working with or the CEO that they're about to meet.
Yeah. And I don't buy into that. I don't subscribe to the fact that anyone is a different person anytime, because I think it will come out. You have micro expressions, or you have just, people can tell if you're not being your true self. So there are a few parallels between sport and between business. But just to go into the your best version as well. I love this concept, and I think about it a lot as well. It's like, I always think about who is the best version of me. How would I describe them? What does she think like? What does she look like? What kind of, what's she wearing? And I always try and think to bring that person to every situation.
And is there a risk of of striving constantly for something, and or do you also marry that with being content with who you are and being at peace with you? That's like one of the big questions I've got for so many people around. How do you juggle the, that's what you're saying, striving for the best version of me, the growth, the, with actually I'm enough as I am and I'm lovable as I am, right? Like how do you marry those two?
I don't necessarily think they're mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. I think by the best version of me, I mean the one who is smiling and the one who's interested in people and the one who's probably wearing activewear and the one who has slept really well and isn't hungry and all those different things that
do you get
I would say are the...
Do you get hungry?
Well, I don't know. No one's their best when they're hungry. But I don't necessarily think... I actually think it's less effort to bring that version of you because there's a concept I learned about the other day called the integrity gap. And that's the difference between the you in private and the you in public.
I used to teach this and I thought I was really smart and I called it the authenticity gap. I used to talk about this concept between who you are and how you show up in the world. But now you just told me that I'm basically a fraud and that there's a thing called integrity gap all along. That's great. That's like,
well, you might have invented it and they might have copied you. I just don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. But so you said the integrity gap is between who you are and how you show up in the world effectively, right?
Yeah. And the bigger that gap is, the more unhappy you will be. So I think it's less effort to just be that version of yourself that everyone knows and understands. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to, it's like if you never tell lies, you never have to remember anything. And then everything becomes
quote
effortless.
On the podcast. Say that again.
If you never tell lies, you never have to remember anything.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That's so good.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Lewis has, I remember him saying, you're only as sick as your secrets. And that really stayed with me, right? This kind of idea of anything you hold on to will find its way to you know, act out, show up, right? But I love also this concept of what you're saying about the best self is, how would my best self show up? What decision would my best self, do this or that? And do I go further towards it? Or do I go further away from it or closer towards it? So, yeah. Did you want to say something on top of that or?
Well, it's also, I know my best self, who I try to be all the time, is open as opposed to closed. So it's like having an open disposition or an open heart and always feeling like you're on the same team as someone rather than against them. And it's like the kind of happiest version of you that you know acts in a certain way and isn't just closed off to learning or closed off to understanding people or resonating with people.
We'll get back to my conversation with Jodie in just 1 minute. Before we do that, I wanted to acknowledge that trying to put yourself out there can feel scary and overwhelming, especially if you don't feel like the kind of person who just loves to compete in shouting contests. And I get that. But I want to let you know that there's actually an alternative. There's another way where you don't have to feel like you have to take photos of your avocado breakfast every day in order to make an impact and grow your audience. I've identified five principles that I've distilled from all the most inspiring and powerful guests I've had on the show that I've now made available to you that you can go and benchmark yourself against to see what areas are you doing incredibly well and what are some of the areas that you can do even better. So go over to www.becomethespotlight.com and take my 3-minute assessment. It's free and it's going to give you a clear pathway to see where you can improve and what are the things you can celebrate. I can't wait to see your score. That's www.becomethespotlight.com. Now let's get back to our powerful conversation. Yeah, there's almost like what you're speaking to. It feels like there's these two versions of ourselves, which, you know, could be considered reactive and creative. And basically when I'm reactive, it's when I'm closed, I'm narrow-minded, I'm stressed, I'm all scattered, I'm, you know, whereas creative version of you is I'm caring, I'm curious, I'm vibrant, you know. And one of the juicy reasons why we postponed this interview until today is because something recently happened, which is very exciting. But you've been running effectively your own agency for how long? I want to say 10 years, but how long have you been running your agency?
Yeah, about nine and a half years.
Cool. So you've grown this agency. And just for people who've got no idea what I'm talking about, how up until recently, or maybe still now, do you describe your agency and what you guys are about?
it's a social media agency, and so it's a team of 16 running the social media for lots of weird and wonderful clients and also training lots of different clients all over the world. And until about a year ago, it was based in Birmingham, but now it's based
on the cloud
with a remote team.
Yeah. And so you went through, and again, you know, this is coming out in April. And by that point, if you need to edit anything out of this, because you're like, actually, contractually, I can't really say that, Mark, we'll drop it out. But you sold your company.
Yeah.
How does that feel to say that out loud?
I haven't got my head around it yet. It hasn't sunk in. So, and it wasn't actually something I was even thinking about. And then this time last year, so March 2020 was when the whole world went upside down. And the agency pretty much shrank by about 25% in a week. And that was because at the time we had so many clients in hospitality and travel and events who were having a really horrible time. And back then we had lots of clients just going through a rough time. And we decided that rather than trying to wave contracts at people, we would just be nice to people who were having a worse time than us. And that's what we did. And then it resulted in a bit of a scary few months, really, where I pretty much tried to outwork coronavirus and also tried to take on all of the worry and the fear myself, because I didn't want any of it to reach my team, because I thought that no one does their best work when they're scared. So I thought I would just take that away from them. And then what that resulted in is my team, who were just very smart and probably had worked out that something wasn't right, just really pulling together and everyone doing so much more than they needed to be resourceful, to adapt. And over the whole year of 2020, we actually ended up growing by nearly 20%. And so I just felt really lucky to have grown during that year, to have the team that meant that was even possible. And then towards the end of last year, I just thought this is the time. This is the time when the team have almost outgrown me, almost outgrown me and where I want to take the agency. And now I feel like I'm holding them back, because it's my dreams. In, I don't have the dreams to be a 30, 50, 100 person agency, but I work with people who are capable of being really big players in that kind of environment. So that's when I thought, yeah, I'm going to go for this and started putting the feelers out there. But it was an interesting situation. And because I was so happy, because everything was great, I loved every part of the agency and of everyone I worked with, it was very much like I was choosing who would buy us.
Yes.
And it felt like a really nice position to be in.
It sounds like you weren't
in
a hurry. You weren't desperate. And and it's so interesting that you're saying that. I spoke to a friend yesterday who also runs like a really big company. And he was saying the exact same thing. He basically said, you know, what it takes to kind of scale a small company from like zero to a team of 12 and, you know, zero to a few million in revenue is very different than taking a company from 10 to 100 employees and 5 mil over, you know, revenue. And that he realized that he was holding back a little bit, the company going like, it's just not what I want to be doing. And again, like you, which I thought is so fascinating, he loves it. Like, he's in this place, like, it's not like he fell out of love with it, or if he's like, I'm burnt, but rather someone else needs to come down and take this. And I said to him, like, it's a torch. It's almost like you carried this torch and now you're giving it to someone else to go and take it and go and become what it needs to be. Like, Chris Tucker, Tucker Max, that, you know, from Scribe, right? When I was interviewing him, he was saying this. One of the things he said, I think, was, I had to make the decision between, do I want to be in charge or do I want to see this company be the greatest company it can be? And that's when he stepped down as CEO, right? Because he realized it was the limitation. So you're putting feelers out there, and are you getting responses? People saying, yeah, we're interested. Like, how do you even go about that? Like, how do you even start trying to sell a company? The only thing I know is like these websites that's like Empire Flips or whatever.
Well, I think I realized that I couldn't just say, oh, I want to sell my company and it would just start happening. I had to get really intentional about it. So I asked people who would know, who would know stuff about exactly what I was trying to do. And then they put me on to other people who put me on to other people. And I just had a lot of different chats with agency owners, people who'd sold their agency before, people who worked with agencies to sell them. And I guess the details have actually come out later on in the year. But we ended up working with a really amazing kind of broker, I guess, who put out an anonymous one pager about us and invited people who we could meet. And so I had loads of what they were called chemistry meetings, where I met potential buyers, and it was
dating. It was a really good, it's like speed buying. Yeah.
And so I met some really, really fascinating companies, and somewhere it probably wasn't really going to work. And it was quite obvious when that was the case, but somewhere I'd got really excited about it. And I thought, this could definitely work. Okay. And because I was so protective, I was like, these are people who are really important to me. These are clients who matter so much. I thought a lot about it before, even before booking second meetings and even before entertaining any offers or doing any negotiations. Yeah. But as it happened, I feel like it was a magical, it was all a dream. It really was. We sold the agency for exactly the amount we had in mind to an absolute perfect buyer with everything that we could have dreamed of for them to have in place. And then the whole process, the due diligence and the sale process, I didn't tell many people about it at all. Yeah. But those who I did tell, I always heard like, oh, it's going to be painful. It's going to be a nightmare. It's really difficult. And it wasn't. Mm. And I really didn't feel for a second like it was a chore or anything. It was all quite exciting because I was learning about this whole new area that I didn't know anything about before.
That's so cool though.
So it only completed 8 days ago as well. To give you
this, at the point we were, because literally people listening to this, right? Like Jody and I had our interview scheduled, I think like right before the sale, and you reached out to me and you're like, hey, how would you feel about postponing this? Because I think the conversation will be much more interesting once I've sold, as opposed to like, I can't talk about it. But like one of the questions I guess I have, it's the what I often find is, how much of yourself have you been pegged to the identity of being the owner of an agency? And like, kind of, I run an agency, I guess it's only been 8 days, right? So decoupling has, you know, conscious decoupling has only begun. But I'm just curious in like, how difficult was that for you to separate yourself from this agency and be able to pass it on to someone else to take care of it? With so much of your DNA. I mean, your name was on the front door, if I'm not mistaken, and then, you know, the pumpkin Halloweens that your team would carve out with like these amazing things that you shared, right? Like, how did that feel for you to go through that process?
I don't know yet. Yeah. I haven't got my head around it. I think.
Well, but how about now? Tell us how you feel now. Like that, by the time this comes out in April, it's like, you know what? It's like a letter to the future. This is like an audio soundbite to the future.
Okay. So I think 8 days ago, I felt like I wasn't going to think about the future in any way. Yeah. I felt like at any point stuff could fall through. It could not happen. I didn't want to have that disappointment. So I didn't let myself think about any further than getting the call to say, okay, it's all gone through. Now I feel like, I feel peaceful. I feel at peace with the people who are taking over, the fact that everyone in the team is excited about it, the fact that it's the right decision for everyone in the team, the fact that it's the right decision for every client. Mm-hmm. So I feel very at peace with it. Mm. And then because because I've got a small shareholding in the group company, I'm happy that I'm still kind of vested in the future success of the agency as well. But I'm just excited for whatever happens next. But even before the last year, like the last year was probably the most involved I'd been, because we were trying to reverse the effects of 2020. But before that, it really was not looked after by me, because I think that I've always run the agency trying to automate, eliminate or delegate as much as possible, and trying to get really good people around me who just take care of their own department. Yeah. So my name was kind of on the door, but I didn't run it.
Yeah.
And I've never really liked the idea of employees. Like, I've never wanted to have employees in that sense of the word. And I never actually use that word. I don't really like it. I always wanted to have team members who they're self-sufficient, they're independent, they're conscientious, they take pride in taking ownership of their own area, and they don't need like following up or telling off or any of that stuff. I think it's because of just being too impatient to want to deal with that.
I mean, I interviewed yesterday, and whenever this episode will come out, I don't know in which order, but I interviewed Paulina Tenner, who's the co-founder of Grantree. And they run an organization that's it's like based on holacracy, where team members or employees set their own salaries. So and all the salaries are transparent and stuff. So it was just amazing to hear about how people are running businesses differently. So I know, and I'm conscious of time. This might be too soon for you, but what's next or what's now? Like as Duke Stump would say, here's to now. But yeah. what's now then for you?
Every year I try and have a mantra that I think about throughout the whole year, and it defines it. And last year it was we are what we repeatedly do.
Yes.
And this year it is jump and the net will appear.
Mm.
And so this is the jump. And I'm sure the net will appear at some point in the future, I think. For now, I've got vague plans of writing more books and doing more sport. I don't think I want to replace every hour I would have spent in front of my laptop with just another hour in front of my laptop. That's something I know for sure. Yeah. But for the rest of the story, who knows?
Who knows?
I'm quite excited just to clear the space and see what happens.
I love that.
See what I can say yes to.
On another book. I don't know how much you can talk about it, but you're currently thinking about another book. You're currently in draft mode, and that'll be something that might be coming out at some point in the near future.
Yeah, that's been a daily practice since the start of this year. It's actually from reading the Scribe Method, which you told me about, and working out how to plan a book from start to finish. And then I've been writing for the first hour and a quarter of every single day. And now I've got 75,000 words, as if by magic.
I know, right?
So I'm quite excited to do the week of not looking at it at all, and then do the editing version.
Oh,
editing,
if you've got a question, I'm actually speaking to Emily, one of the senior editors. I'm Scribe. We're going to be talking. We're going to be jamming about imposter syndrome and why people, you know, the whole stuff around book writing. But if you've got a question for her, let me know. I'll squeeze that in. So you know, one of the last topics I want to talk to you, because you know that the book I'm writing is around helping entrepreneurs, business leaders overcome imposter syndrome to put themselves out there more. And I know for a fact that you don't do that many interviews, right? You don't do that much talking, like public speaking hasn't really been your thing. And I'm just curious, has that been intentional, or has there ever been an element of fear or doubt or feeling like a fraud, any of that? Unpack.
No, I don't suffer from imposter syndrome. I probably have the opposite, whatever that is. Which is where you'll just do anything. It's not, I think the answer is that I do not take myself seriously enough to have imposter syndrome. And whether that is a true reflection of what imposter syndrome is, I don't know, but I just don't care. If I'm not qualified to talk about something, so what? You know, I can always learn.
So what scares you? Maybe that's a better question. What does scare you? Where do you still find yourself to have a bit of an edge, like a feeling, a little bit of a fear that comes up? Like, what is it that maybe scares you a bit?
So I read recently that there's two ways of thinking about how you want to live your life. And one of them is the kind of explorer mindset, where you tend towards exploring and new opportunities and new people and new experiences. And the other is the settler mindset, where you tend towards stability and, you know, a mortgage, a car, a holidays this many times a year. Yeah. That scares me. That settler way scares me. And because everything around us is geared up to the settler way of being, it's all about like, oh, you know, secure your dream home and, you know, book
have
this
six
and it's
kids,
all about
two
that
Labradors
stability.
Have the gate outside.
I mean, I love Labradors, but I don't want one. It's the settler mindset that really scares me. And I think that especially in pandemic mode, right, when we can't go anywhere, I think that I'm really conscious not to make any permanent decisions based on this temporary situation, because I think they would be settler decisions, and I don't want them.
Mm. That's so interesting. There's also what came up for me as you said that there's almost a in and this I'm just projecting and I might be putting words in your mouth, but there's like the word giving up. There's something like the settlement is like giving up on your curiosities, your freedom, your thirst for life, your, you know, like the juiciness that comes with life's uncertainties are like.
Yeah, it's complacency totally. Yeah. It's just a scary concept that I think you have to work really hard not to go near.
All right. What's the flaw here, Jodie? I'm trying to find it. What's the crack in the armor? There must be something. Like, do you binge on like rom-coms on Saturday night? Like, what is it that Jodie Cook does that we're going to find out is the dirty little secret that nobody knows about? Do you find yourself, is there like, do you eat the weirdly like the Jaffa cakes, you only eat the chocolate side but not the biscuit side? Like, what is something that I can just grab onto?
So you do keep mentioning Netflix, and I don't actually have Netflix. I'm probably one of the only people in the world who doesn't.
You don't write 6 books and like go and compete in Team GB with Netflix in the background.
What is the... Oh, I don't know. And probably if I did know, I wouldn't tell you. I'll let you work it out.
All right, look, we're coming to the edge, Jodie. I just wanted to, first, I want to say thank you for showing up and coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Secondly, thank you so much for the contribution you're doing in our group with the Avengers and being part of that with you. It's so cool. Like, you're always so generous and you're always recording these voice notes and sharing your thoughts and what you bring, at least for me, and I can only speak for myself, it's like this, there's a lightness to you. And what I mean by lightness, I just mean like possibility and why not? You know, and that is something that's so needed. So I just want to say thank you for that, generally, because that's needed, right? Like, we need that. And I'm excited for your next steps, whatever that may be. Who knows what you're going to pick up, but what I'll know is whatever you do, you'll go full in, you know, you'll enjoy. So what does being unconventional mean to you?
It means always questioning everything you hear, everything you see. And making sure that you are following your version of success and living an extraordinary life and not someone else's. Mm.
Love it. Where do you hang out most? Where can people go and find you if they want to follow up with you or connect with you in any kind of way? What's the best place to go and hang out online with you?
So my website is jodiecook.com, J-O-D-I-E-C-O-O-K. I am on Instagram and Twitter and LinkedIn, but I would love to hear from people who've listened to this episode just through my contact form. Just say hi, introduce yourself.
Yeah, love it. Jodie Cook, you're a special human. Thank you for all that you do. Good luck with the next phase, and I'm really excited to the future for you.
Thank you very much.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. If you want to find out more about Jodie and her work, go and check her out on our website. I'll put all the information in the show notes below. I'm just really grateful that she came on, and you'll be happy to know that I did find out what was one of her Achilles heels and vices, if you like, which she managed to share with me offline, and I'm going to share it, Jodie, because I think it's pretty awesome. Easter eggs. So if you are looking to bring Jodie down, bring her Easter eggs by the buckets around Easter, and that is the one thing that she has going. So I thought that was quite cool to find out, but she's an incredible human. Go and read her pieces and she and all the contributions. And I really look forward to seeing the impact this episode has on you. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please make sure to share it with a friend who needs to hear this. And of course, I always appreciate a rating and a review over on Apple Podcasts to help spread the message. So without further ado, I want to let you off by letting you know that you matter, your story has value, and I can't wait to see you on the next episode. I'll see you then. Today's episode is brought to you by Become the Spotlight. If you are tired of feeling like the best kept secret and you want to get a clear roadmap on areas that you can improve and dramatically change your business so that you can get better leads, become more visible, and improve your credibility, there are 5 principles in which you need to top score marks. That's know yourself, own your story, play a bigger game, amplify your impact, and find your allies. If you want to find out how well you're doing on all those areas, head out to www.becomethespotlight.com, and I can't wait to see your score in there.